guys. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, none other than Mr. Robbie Duncan McNeil.
Robbie Duncan McNeil with an eye infection.
What?
Yeah, I've got a, I don't know if you can see, I don't want to gross everybody out, but I've got
I can see that. It's in the right corner of your eye. Yeah,
yeah, it's right there.
When you look left, I can see it. It is very red.
I know.
Those of you who are listening,
I know.
Honestly, guys, it looks like someone just, it was like a left jab right to his eye.
And just imagine what Tom Paris looked like in Threshold.
This is the beginning of Threshold.
This is the beginning. Yes. Okay. Basically, it's I'm going to turn into a lizard soon.
Well, what you're saying is it starts with pink eye. You get conjunctivitis, yes. You get pink eye, your eye gets red, and then you turn into a lizard. Right?
Exactly. Okay. That's how it all starts, the threshold.
Goodness, this is crazy. Yeah. Wow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're in a closet, right? You told me you're in a closet.
I am. Yeah, I'm in the new house.
Let's get this straight. You're not in the closet. You are in a closet.
I'm in
a
closet.
So if you're in the closet, that would mean that you are
actually— That's a different expression.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
We want to be clear about that. Okay.
Yes.
Can you please explain what's happening?
Yeah, well, I moved into a new house and I tried to do this, set all this up in my, let's call it the library, or I don't know what it's going to be, but it's like, it's a nice room. There was space. But there's nothing in the house yet. We have so little set up that it's really echoey. Everything was super echoey.
Yes.
So I realized there's this kind of storage closet, walk-in closet that's got carpet on the floor and it's kind of quiet. So this is where I'm at. I'm in a closet. Yes.
Thank you for clarifying that.
How does it sound? Does it sound
better than before?
Better.
Yeah. Just so everyone knows, we recorded a deep dive recording, a video basically for Patreon patrons. And it was so bad. That sound was bouncing everywhere.
Oh my God. It's like an empty house.
It sounded like Robbie had moved into an empty house and all his belongings had not made it to the house yet.
That's what it was. So this is better. In a closet is much better. So what are we talking about this week? What's
macrocosm.
We're almost half macrocosm.
I can't believe we're almost halfway done. This is crazy. We're almost to the 3.5 year point, right? Season three, middle of season three.
Yep.
And we went for 7. So 3.5 would be half of 7. My goodness. Time has flown by.
It really has. It's crazy. I can't believe it.
Yikes. Okay. All right.
Well, so, I'm excited to watch this one at our nearing our halfway point. I can't wait to review an episode from my new house in the echoey house.
Echoey.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll be right back. And Patreon patrons, stay tuned for What Do We Remember? Hey guys, we are back from our rewatch. Robbie's rewatch took probably 1/5 of the time of my rewatch, just so everyone knows.
I did the rewatch, I did my notes, I took a nap, I had a snack, I made a snack, I went down the basement, worked on a project, cleaned the kitchen, probably other things, I don't know.
I just want you to say, I'm going to tell you this. This podcast is good for your nap life and and check off your to-do list life, because you get to do all these little extra things that you not have time for. But since you're waiting for me, you have time for it.
Yeah. Right. All right. Macrocosm.
Do it.
Let's do it. It's written by Brandon Braga.
Yeah.
And directed by Alex Singer.
Alex Singer.
Yes. Alex. He was old school.
Old school. I liked Alex. And that was my impersonation of Alex.
He sort of has this kind of voice where he's clearly from the East Coast.
You know, he's got that East Coast accent.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we love Alex.
That was that. We loved Alex.
And that's why I'm wearing a Brooklyn shirt right now in honor of nice. Alex, really.
Yeah. What did you think?
I liked it. It's just interesting how stories are structured, because this one was clearly, you know, mystery. And then let's fill you in on what happened. Like,
so yeah, and all the flashback.
Yeah, lots of flashback scenes, right? You know, so
filling Janeway in, filling the audience in on the mystery.
Yeah. For me, this episode, you know, there were so many different levels to this episode, because you're jumping back and forth between time and you know, you're trying to figure out what's going on in the beginning. It's kind of a almost like a horror slash murder mystery kind of feel when you're going through there. So overall, I mean, as a fan, I was entertained by this episode. I did like this episode.
I didn't hate this episode at all.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of good things about it.
Right.
But it was definitely had some flaws for me.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. We'll get into that. Let's go ahead and get our, let's do our synopsis, our poetry synopsis. Let's hear your haiku.
Here comes my haiku for Star Trek Voyager's episode, Macrocosm.
Mm.
Tac-tac have sweet moves. Mucousy virus spreads fast. Janeway wins and paints.
Yes, that was amazing.
That's my haiku.
I'm really happy with that one. I like that one.
That's, I had to get one. The tac-tac in there, because I've never seen anything like it,
you know. And since I'm you know, you and I, Paris and Kim, are buddies, and in real life we're sometimes on the same wavelength, and I've got tac-tac in my poetry.
Okay,
here we go. My limerick for Macrocosm: while Janeway trades with the tac-tac, Voyager deals with an attack. The doctor's alive. He helps synthesize an antigen, which brings everyone back.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
That really covers, you know, in a much more straightforward way what
it
happened.
It does. And I almost just, it was almost like a run-on sentence, the last verse. I just kind of used everything together there. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, once again, written by Brannon, directed by Alex Singer. We start out the very opening scene. That is.
By the way, before you start.
Oh, yes.
Here's one important thing I have to say.
What?
This was a concept that I thought was very interesting, based on, you know, the fact that we are dealing with a pandemic right now. We're dealing with a, you know, coronavirus pandemic. We've been in it for a year, and here is an episode about a virus that it evolves so fast. It grows from a microscopic level into something, you know, insect size, and then much larger.
Much larger.
Yeah, right. Which is interesting. I hadn't thought about this. Brannon wrote it. It's another sort of sped up evolution concept. It's you know what I mean? I think Brannon definitely likes that concept of you know, biological evolution happening, you know, speeding up at a super fast rate, and, you know, all of that. It's an interesting, you know, connection to the writer.
No, that's a good point. And I also, you know, I didn't bring this up before when you asked me what I thought about this episode, but I definitely, through the entire viewing of this episode, I kept thinking about parallels to what we're dealing with now with COVID-19. The entire I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Goodness, you know. So
yeah, I think that's really important to put in the context of this, because I had the same thing. Like
You
realize it's a virus invading, and, you know, there were so many interesting echoes of what we're dealing with, you know, metaphorically, of course.
Yeah. So let's jump to the opening scene. They're in the shuttle, and I thought they were in the alien shuttle, but they're not. They're actually in the Starfleet shuttle, which looks, for some reason, very large and spacious, you know, in this particular opening scene.
I had the same thought. For me, I think because we ended up with the Delta Flyer for the last few years as kind of a main shuttle.
Right.
Often that's what we went to. That looking at some of these scenes in the original shuttle, you realize how big it was. It was, we inherited that set from Next Gen. And,
that's, you know, the TNG shuttle. Yeah.
Yeah, it's TNG shuttle, but it was a big shuttle. You know, you could fit a lot of people in there.
Yeah.
And it was a big sort of empty space in the middle.
Right. Yeah. We have the guest star playing the tac-tac. Counselor or council, however they refer to him. That's Albie Selznick. Did you ever work with Albie?
No.
Other than, okay.
No.
He was in one of my acting classes. So he's a fellow student you know, in a with a certain acting teacher that we had. I can't remember to this day who that was, but I remember he and I were in the same class. That's for
interesting.
So when he was on set, I remember, you know, talking to him.
I wondered if he was like a dancer or something. He seemed like a theater person because of those moves. I mean, he did a great job of, you know, the the moves, the physical communicating with gestures, and you know, comes a, I mean, it's a very funny idea. I just was, was so funny. It was kind of silly to me. I was
Definitely silly, to the point that it was reminiscent of Third Rock from the Sun for me, because that that sitcom basically, you know, with John Lithgow as humans posing as aliens, aliens posing as humans, excuse me, they have like a salute or greeting, which is very like, it's kind of like what Neelix was doing when he was having his hands up by his face.
Oh,
like
that's
funny. They do a weird little thing. So these overly exaggerated, obnoxious kind of gestures reminded me of Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, it felt very,
very sitcom-ish.
Like gaggy, like a gag, like a funny comedy gag. And, you know, when Janeway starts to talk, she, you know, it's mostly Neelix and this Tac-Tac character.
Make her quiet. Is it what he say? Make her quiet.
And he's like, his fingers are like, make her, what did he say? Please make her be quiet.
Make her quiet. Yeah. Something like very awkward.
And then,
yeah.
And then Neelix says, you know, whatever, good health or something in his elbow. He does his, the Neelix looks, elbow.
Right. But he looks away when he has,
he looks away and then puts his elbow up, and it was just all the weird gesture. It was silly. It was very silly.
Yeah. But we do, we learn later when they've departed, they're heading back to Voyager. We learn later that Janeway basically offended the Tac-Tac by having her hands on her hip, which is a very Janeway posture on the bridge. She does the hands on the hips a lot. But then that reminded me of, at growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, I took martial arts from the same teacher who taught Elvis Presley, Master Kong Ri. And in that school, if you had your hands on your hip or your arms folded, you were basically reprimanded and you had to do push-ups. Like if they caught anybody doing that. So that, that was offensive in our school. Like we're not supposed to ever have our hands on our hips. Yeah. So then I started thinking,
so he was a Tac-Tac.
He was a Tac-Tac. My master Kong Ri was a Tac-Tac. So we learn about the possible promotion of future promotion of Neelix to ambassador.
I didn't want to bring this up, you know, Garrett, because Harry never got a, you know, any offers of promotion. And here Neelix is like using his elbow and he gets an ambassador.
Oh, well, I went all Tac-Tac when I saw that. I was so offended. I was like, what the?
No. And what I took away from that is Harry should have used elbow gestures when he was communicating, and you would have gotten a promotion. Okay.
I should have said, Captain, how are you?
Exactly.
Great today. Have you thought of promoting?
Please keep talking.
Yeah.
Please keep talking. Yes.
Okay, fine. The Voyager is not at the rendezvous coordinates and not responding to hails. What is going on? So Janeway does a long range scan. She finds out it's one light year away and the ship appears to be adrift. So here begins the mystery, right? The story begins as a mysterious, like an absence.
What's going
on? A disappearance. They basically, nobody's responding. They don't know what the heck's going on.
So they fly over there. And the ship is empty. Everything is at red alert.
Yes, they detect one thing, a bioelectric field, which is permeating the ship. That's all they can access. The main computer is down. The comm systems are offline. Janeway does notice there's a bioneural gel pack, which has ruptured in sick bay. So, you know, she's thinking there's something going on here. They come across, you know, somebody's equipment that was doing some maintenance
tools,
work.
A power relay being, you know, worked on for some reason. And the tools are just left there. They hear some voices.
They detect a comm signal and they hear some type of voices, right? It's coming from Samantha Wildman's quarters. And again, this whole thing is reminiscent of Aliens, like at the second movie, where they go to the colony and they come in, they say, wow, these people were in the middle of breakfast. They must have just left, you know? And it's the same thing. This thing is, this program's running. It's Neelix's Good Morning Voyager program, which is set on an automatic playback. That's why it's still going
on. Neelix says, by the way, she's my most dedicated listener. I loved that he knew that. He was very happy that Lieutenant Wildman loves his Good Morning Voyager show. And we saw a little clip of it. We saw a little moment of him on the screen.
We did.
His Enthusiastic Neelix Good Morning Show.
That should be a segment for Delta Flyers. We should have the Good Morning Voyager show with like Neelix cartoons that are animated.
Oh God, that's great.
Would that be good, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We discovered that 11 hours ago, this is when this thing started going on. So this number 11 keeps popping up, right? The protein decay of the food tells us 11 hours ago. So we know that is a big number right there. Really, there's nothing like a good old-fashioned mystery story. We go to the transporter room, and we see that there's this hole in the floor of the transporter pad, which, once again, it looks so much like the movie, the alien, the xenomorph, that's what you call it.
Hole. They go up to this hole, and it's got slime all over it.
Slime as ever.
Mucilaginous compound,
yes.
Janeway says.
Yes.
With non-humanoid DNA.
Yes. And again, if you watch the original Alien film, when the alien was cut, its blood was acidic and it would melt through all the floors of the of the spacecraft. And that's kind of what this looks like, even though it's not an acid reaction. This thing just punched right through the floor, right? And then it left this trail of,
goes into the Jeffrey's tubes, Janeway says. And just about this point, the environmental controls start to fail. It's getting very, very hot.
Yeah. Going offline.
And they're heading down to whatever deck the hole was going to when the turbo lift suddenly stops and you can hear this insect sound. You can the turbo lift is kind of bouncing around. Clearly something's trying to get in or do something.
Yeah. And then now we find out that Neelix grew up near these Rhynax marshlands, so that he was used to these 50 degrees Celsius temperatures in the summer, 90% humidity, lava flies, which is kind of foreshadowing to the little fly-like things that have come out later. But it's funny because did you notice when he talks, he leaves Janeway in the turbolift and he walks a circle. And the way that's filmed, man, that turbo lift looks like it's like 60 feet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not. It is so cramped in there.
The way that they would do that. Yeah. The way that you would do that is you would have a cameraman with a camera on his shoulder and a very wide angle lens, like a fisheye almost.
Yes.
And then you would have the two shot and you would have Neelix start to walk and the camera operator would just turn in a circle to follow him around. But that wide angle lens.
Yeah.
Makes everything seem much deeper.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah. Because it really looked like he covered a mile, right? I mean, he's covering so much ground in this walk around. Yeah. And it's very cramped in there. No, it's not big at all. So it
was
not
very deceiving. That lens made it look very deceiving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very much so. So that's one thing I wrote down. I'm like, Jesus, it looks like he's walking around the bridge or something, right?
And then after he describes his youth and growing up with all these bugs and he's so used to, you know, hot weather and it's not bothering him, all of a sudden, one of these giant monster
the tentacle. Yeah.
The tentacle pops through the side of the turbo lift and spews him with some mucilaginous compound.
I wrote he got slimed Ghostbuster style, basically.
Totally got slimed.
Right there. And you know what? Maybe that's what we should start saying. Like if you kind of have a bit of a cough and I'll be like, you know what? You seem to have a lot of mucilaginous compound in your throat. Mm. I could use this as our everyday terminology from now.
Absolutely.
Forward. Yes.
I like mucilaginous compound. I would like to use it as much as possible.
Awesome. That's so good. Okay. So now.
And he says, I'm okay.
He's okay. Right. But we realize later, this is the way they transmit the virus by getting slimed, essentially, as well as being bit, as well, you know, other ways too. But we're not to that point yet. In the Jeffrey's tube, Janeway detects faint human life sign.
I just want to point something out. When you see these shots of the Jeffrey's tube, if you watch this episode,
you'll
notice that the Jeffrey's tube doesn't appear to go straight. It's like the lights on the side sort of go straight for a while, and then the angle sort of changes and it looks, you know, the color is a little different. The reason for that is at the end of the Jeffrey's tube, there was just a projection, like a photograph or whatever, at the back of our Jeffrey's tube of a much longer Jeffrey's tube. There was no set there. The Jeffrey's tube was only about 10 feet long. It was not that long.
That's right.
And you can see it a number of times in these scenes when they're crawling in Jeffrey's tubes that behind them, probably like 3 or 4 feet behind them, was just a photograph of more Jeffrey's tube.
More Jeffrey's tube.
Yeah, there's not the Jeffrey's tubes we had typically were not that big, the ones that we had standing. Occasionally, a few times, we did build some longer sections for special episodes. But in this one, I noticed every time you look at the back of the Jeffries tube, it was like, oh, there's that photograph.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite match. It's a little bluer. It's, it was just interesting. Yeah.
Well, that's the magic of Hollywood once again, right? Just got to make sure the audience can't pick it out and discover what you're doing.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, when he's, you know, Neelix is feeling the effects of being infected, and he doesn't know he's infected really, but he can't really go on. And at this point, this whole thing became Joseph Campbell for me. Like the whole, you know, it's like,
yeah, the hero's journey,
right? And basically Neelix is the guide that takes Janeway to a certain point, but then he can't go any further. Am I right? That he passes and he says, you must go alone on this journey.
So that's right.
Immediately I kept thinking of you and your you know,
the hero's
you
journey.
Talk about hero's journey with Joseph
Campbell.
I love Campbell.
The hero's journey. It's the foundation of storytelling for
yes,
sure.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So she climbs up to a higher level to access a med kit because she's trying to get a hypo spray to come down and help Neelix, you know, feel better. But she gets back and he's gone. He's been attacked and basically taken away by one of the entities. Because at this point, we don't know. We've seen a tentacle, but we don't know anything else, right? So very scary. Engineering is the next set where Janeway shows up.
I did record some comments as I watched this part.
Oh, good.
Her phaser technique in engineering was impeccable. Like the turning and pointing and circling around. And oh my God, I was watching it going like, wow, that is a lot of turning and pointing.
Do you think someone coached her on that?
Here's the thing. When I have done, like on Turner and Hooch, we had the U.S. Marshals as our main character's job. He was a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah.
Whenever we had a scene on Turner and Hooch where he had to draw a weapon or do anything tactical.
Yes.
We had a...
The consultant was there.
A consultant there to say, oh, well, when you approach this door, you'd come from the side. You know, you'd push the door and look quickly. And then if it's clear, you make the next move.
Correct.
He knew all the moves of where to hold the
weapon. Yeah, he
gave
the step-by-step to the actors, right?
For the real, the authentic sort of tactical techniques that you would use.
Of course.
I don't ever remember us having a tactical advisor.
We did not
Star
have
Trek.
We never had a phaser consultant.
No. So as I watched her enter engineering, which is a wide open, if there were bad guys in there with weapons, it would be like, you know, shoot, what do they say? Shooting something in a barrel, fish in a barrel.
Something. Yeah.
It, like she would be like fish in a barrel in there. And her technique was, I love Kate, but it was horrible.
Well,
like, the moves had no bearing on tactically on where she might be vulnerable or not. It was just cool moves. It was just...
Okay. I'm going to rewind just a little bit. Do you remember when her and Neelix first go to Samantha Wildman's quarters and they open up the door?
Yeah.
She kind of jumps in. Did you notice that?
Yes,
there's like a little bit of a jump there. So that's when I was like, oh, okay. This is quite stylized, you know? And then
very,
it continues later.
Yes, it's very flashy and showy, but it's not smart. Open that door.
Yeah.
You would take cover for a beat to see if anyone made a move. Then you know, cover me while I go in. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's tactical techniques. Yeah.
But back to engineering. Now we're back in engineering. Did you notice she did a lot of two-handed phaser?
Which
I'm sorry. I don't think anyone else ever did that because if you're thinking, because if you think if you're holding a modern 21st century weapon or 21st century weapon now, you're holding two hands specifically for the recoil that happens from the 9mm that you're firing, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to get that recoil from a phaser. So it's really, it's a superfluous movement to add another hand. I guess to make it
more
steady.
It was all part
steady.
Of the flashy, showy stuff. It worked.
Okay.
It worked.
All right.
But it worked fine.
Yeah.
But as long as you don't think about it too hard.
Yeah. No.
Start thinking about, oh, if there were bad guys, you haven't looked behind you, Kate. In that big wide open balcony that's right behind you.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of the balcony, I love that set. I just love
engineering.
Oh, it's great. It's such a beautiful set. And then Janeway goes to the upper level. And I always thought that upper level with that plexiglass floor was so cool.
Yeah.
And this is before anyone really did plexiglass, you know, floors anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So this was really kind of an advanced, kind of hip, futuristic concept. And I just loved that set, yeah, period. So yeah, she's at the upper level and she finds in a storage crate, basically, that she loads up on equipment. She's putting in phaser rifles. And I love she finds like a Bowie knife too, right? She's like, I'm going to take a knife too, just in case.
She uses it later.
Explosive. She's got the whole thing. Yeah.
By the way, I wrote down, Janeway took all the weapons that Voyager has. It literally felt like she opened up the trunk of all the weapons that the whole ship had, and she took one of everything, at least.
Yeah,
many weapons.
When you say the trunk, it's so much like the television series Supernatural. They go into their trunk for all their weapons, and that's Janeway's Supernatural moment, right?
Yeah.
She gears up. Once again, similar to Ripley from the Aliens franchise.
Oh, she took her clothes off in that scene too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. She's
because the environmental controls are off, so she takes off the outer layer of her suit.
Yeah,
and then I noticed that the undergarment was sort of flopping.
That thing had Velcro or something on it in the back, because when she pulled that little that mock turtleneck thing off, it came off like nothing. It was like, you know. You could almost hear the Velcro unfastening or unlatching, and then she's now in an undershirt. Basically.
She's in her tank top.
But I know that thing, the other thing that we had to wear underneath, took way longer to take off. Like, you know, you had to shimmy
and
out
the
of
zipper
it.
Zipper up the
back. And there's a zipper in the back, so that would have, you know, so that was probably fabricated by wardrobe department.
For this quick gag.
That's it. Yeah, the magic of Hollywood.
She took her communicator off.
Yeah, she off stuck of it on uniform.
But when she reached down, she sort of reached down and twisted it.
Really?
And I was like, why is she twisting? It's just Velcro. Like, it just comes on and off. But I think she wanted to make a move that was like that's the way you take it.
Yeah, it's a
as if it's locked into something, which it's not.
Well, it's not, but I like that though. Look at that. That's attention to detail. I think if Kate came up with that, I applaud that then. I think that's really good.
I noticed it.
I think too often actors, you know, fail to realize that there's extra steps involved. Like if you have more attention to detail, like you then add these little extra things to your performance, which she did, which is good.
Next, I think we see her on the bridge. She comes on the bridge. Nobody's there. But you see a lot of green slime. And I just kept thinking of Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon.
90s. And you know,
it's the same color as Nickelodeon slime, that sort of lime green. Yeah,
yes, it was the green slime. Yeah, I did notice as she made her way across the bridge and looking around that there's slime everywhere, right. But I did notice that my station had the most slime of any place on the bridge. So, my takeaway of that is I must have put up a very heroic fight to get the most slime on the bridge.
Okay. Or maybe the virus that was near you was just the most snotty of all the viruses. It had the most mucilaginous compound.
I mean, it's funny because I thought that when I saw this. And then later on, when I see what really happens, I realize I was nowhere near the bridge when all this went down. So
you were in the mess hall,
I mean, so the truth is my heroic interpretation of the most slime. Meh. I was burning steak in the mess hall.
Yes, you were. I find it funny that you're sitting there and you see the alien perspective. Now the camera angle is the macro virus. Yeah, this weird sort of hovering kind of like on a steady cam, kind of like floating through. And I'm thinking, why does Janeway not see this? Because up until this point, we've only established the tentacle. So you're thinking this thing's huge, right? So I'm thinking, how can she not in her peripheral vision see this thing
see
floating
it or
towards
hear it
her?
Or something.
Yeah. But then we realize this is the smaller version. This is the fly size version.
It's tiny.
Right?
Yeah, it's a bug.
Tiny little bug.
It hits her arm and she smacks it and kills it.
She kills the little bug and she pulls out a dermal regenerator and tries to, you know, heal herself, I guess, for the bug bite. Obviously, it's not going to do anything. And then she realizes that all the life signs are located in one area on the ship, or a couple of areas. Actually, it's cargo bay and mess hall. But she makes her way over to mess hall and she kind of comes in there. And
by the way, before you go into the mess hall, in the hallway, as she goes, I saw her lean up against the wall and kind of take her rifle, and she puts it down low.
Yeah, she does.
And on the weapons, often on Star Trek, we would have the Sims beacons or some kind of light,
yeah,
maybe sometimes strapped on her arm. And Marvin Rush, the DP, would always say, that is your light. Like, you need to help light yourself.
That's
like,
right.
You know, when you yeah, stop here, just turn your arm up so the light is kind of shining on your face.
Yeah.
And then you can keep moving. And right. I noticed Kate, she goes over by the door. She takes the rifle that has a light on it and she sort of puts it down.
And lights her own face.
And lights her face perfectly. And I was just like, oh, Marvin. Marvin told her to do that. Put the gun down so she has a moment of this dramatic light from below. It was just perfectly like glowing on her face.
Yes. And just to explain to people, Sims beacon, explain to people what that means.
Sims beacons were the lights that we would sometimes strap on our wrist, or it would strap onto a, you know, a weapon or something. It was basically just a mag light like you would buy in the hardware store is all right. It was.
But we called it a Sims beacon because it was named after our props master, Alan Sims.
Alan Sims.
That's the reason why. Yeah. So, but you're so right. Marvin would say, okay, you're going to use your light to light yourself. And we're like, oh Jesus. So then you've got to look
natural.
Think
about that too.
But you can't be like, you can't be obvious. You can't take it and go, ta-da, like right on your face. Like that.
Or he would say, light the other actor.
Oh, right. Like right. Yeah.
So if we're in the cage together and you and I stop and we talk for a beat,
right,
he would want us to, you know, me to sort of shine my light, but not hold it there. Just sort of have it kind of moving around a little.
This is what I recall the most from Marvin always say, like, you know, keep flashing the, like, with your Sims beacon, go cross the camera with it. You know what I'm saying? Flare the lens. Just, you know, keep coming across, searching for something, make sure you go across the lens so we can see it. So that was a comment that I heard a lot of directions.
I remember that.
Me to do that.
Okay. So she goes in the mess hall and who's the first person, who's the only that she checks on?
And it's 20 minutes, 20 minutes into this episode, and we finally see Harry. It's like, boop.
Well, you haven't seen Paris yet.
No, you haven't seen Paris yet. So
a lot of people, but but you're the only, like, there's a room full of bodies.
Yeah.
And you are the only one. I just want to. So
where are you? You are in that same mess hall. Clearly,
Didn't go check on me.
No, she didn't. But I was at the door. Sitting at the chair at the door. Which then there's a continuity issue later in this episode because you see the mess hall again, and the person slumped by the door is a female background actress a teal blue medical uniform. So I'm like, hey, wait, what?
Well, they must have moved around. There must have been time passed before you ended up in that chair. But
and she talks to me. She's like, Harry, and then you hear something from Harry. It's sort of like. It's just this kind of phlegmy, it's this mucilaginous compound sound is what it is, you know, in my throat sound, and I'm just going that's all you get. The larger version of the flying alien now has shown itself. Okay, so we see this huge macro virus, and it tackles Janeway. It knocks her so hard that basically it bruises her ribs and ruptures one of her muscles. She shoots it with her phaser rifle.
She does.
And the doc, she makes it to sick bay where the doctor pulls a phaser on her, not knowing who she is.
Yeah. Can I say one thing back in the mess hall?
Yeah, go back.
She actually did go over to Chakotay.
Oh, that's right. She did. She did.
She went over to Chakotay. Yeah. So you're not the only one she loves. She went over to Chakotay.
Yeah.
And he's on the floor and she tries to talk to him and she sees this, I'll call it the neck orifice. She sees that.
the neck orifice.
Yeah, she sees that bug bite that's kind of got a hole in it.
Yeah.
And she's looking at it. And all of a sudden, bugs start coming out of the neck orifice.
Right, right.
And I was like, I was really grossed out. Because that's the first time I think we see the neck orifice excrete the little bug virus.
Yeah.
It was disgusting.
And, you know, parallels to the Alien film franchise. Where do the aliens come from? Yeah, they come from a little orifice, these little pods, you know, out of the body, right? But they're all initially in these pods, and then they come out, then they go into your body, and they come out of your chest. So, again, a lot of parallels with aliens.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
When she goes in the sick bay, you were just talking about another thing before the doctor pulls a phaser on her.
Yes.
She's trying to pry open another door at the sick bay.
Right.
And I noticed she looked ripped.
Really?
I thought like whatever the angle or the lighting or whatever, she looked like you could see some muscular.
Yeah. Good for her.
Musculature.
Maybe she worked out before this.
And I was just like, does she even lift?
She.
That's what I thought. But. Does she even lift?
We need to have her as a guest on, and just to talk about this episode and say, we only have one question for you, Kate. Do you even lift? And she'll
be
like,
lift?
What do you mean by that?
Lift she looked what? Ripped, though. She looked ripped. She looked good. And she pulls the door open, pries it open, and the doc puts a phaser in her face.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of surprised me that moment. And he brings her in, and this is what you were talking about before. He catches her up on everything that's happened.
Right.
Starts to treat her superficially at this point.
Right. So now, as an audience member, we now learn what the heck's been going on, right? Voyager has been infected by this macro virus, and he's telling her all this while he's performing minor surgery on her ruptured muscle and bruised ribs. And he tells her that Voyager basically received a distress call from a nearby mining colony of a race called the Garen. Now, Garen is interesting because right after the end of Voyager, Tim Russ directed a independent Star Trek film called Star Trek of Gods and Men. And he asked me to act in this film. And the character that they had written for me is Garen.
Is
the name of the race of these aliens that were the miners, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a little tidbit, little fact.
Little trivia.
Trivia fact there, yes.
Well, the Garen in the mining colony have a virus.
Yes.
And the doc says, you know, he's got to come up with a synthetic antigen. And he offers, tells the captain he wants to go. Mm-hmm. Wants to go down there and...
on his first away mission,
not the captain,
right?
Sorry. He tells Chakotay because the captain's off with... in this flashback, the captain was gone with Neelix. But he tells Chakotay, who's in charge at this point.
Yes, correct.
He wants to go down to the mining colony and look into this virus. And... Yeah. He goes on the bridge at one point. He's very enthusiastic about all of this.
Yeah.
Goes on the bridge. He says, I've studied, away mission protocols and I'll keep an open channel. And Chakotay looks at Tuvok and like, let's do that. Let's keep an open channel. And Tuvok sort of got a grin. And the first time we see Paris is now when it cuts to Paris looking back and sort of like with a chuckle, like a smile, like, oh, that doc, he's so enthusiastic.
That's your whole scene, isn't it?
That's the scene.
That's it. That's the only one. That's the only one. And
that's going to be some B'Elanna stuff.
A note at the 32-minute mark. We have the first intelligible lines from Harry Kim. Like, so he's not doing the phlegm mucilaginous compound throat acting. He's actually saying something. And 29 seconds later, Paris, we see him for the first time with just a smile.
Yes.
Not that just he's just smile. Wearing just a smile, but he just has a smile. And he has a Starfleet uniform.
And I have my Starfleet uniform.
Yes. Yeah. Well, did you also notice everyone's referring to the mobile emitter with different names? They call it the autonomous emitter in the prior scene. Then on the bridge, they talk about it. Chakotay calls it a portable emitter.
Yeah.
So here's the fan challenge for all of you listeners out there. How many different ways can you come up with how to say mobile emitter? So autonomous emitter, portable emitter.
Mobile emitter was the word, you know, the term we used. But right. This is early on, just a couple episodes back.
Yeah.
We had the Future's End where we got this technology.
Yes.
This is really new for the doctor and for the writers. So yeah, there were a bunch of names for it.
Yeah. I just think it'd be kind of fun if people came up with their you know,
their mobile emitter.
Their mobile emitter, what they would call it, a mobile emitter.
I love it.
You know,
I love it.
Portable. So tweet that, put that on Facebook, wherever on the Delta Flyers social media platforms that you follow us. We'd like to hear. We're in the mine shaft now. The doctor is giving an overly detailed report, which is hilarious, to Chakotay. Mm-hmm. He's telling him, like, and the walls are comprised of this. And then the doctor...
Yeah, Chakotay's like, we don't need all this detail, doctor. This,
and the way the doctor just throws away, he's like, oh, that's fine. It was just comedic gold, I thought. Yeah, it was wonderful.
It was great.
He finds the macroscopic version of the virus, which flies out of one of the miners' necks.
Another neck orifice.
And yes, the virus has basically absorbed the miner's growth hormone into its protein structure. And that's why they're increasing in size exponentially because of this.
30 microns a second is what the doctor says.
It's incredible. It just keeps moving.
Super fast. Yeah. Chakotay's like, get back on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, great, I'll bring these guys back. We've got to save them. And it was kind of an emotional moment there because the doctor has real, compassion and
empathy. He does. Yeah.
People who are sick, and Chakotay is just saying, you cannot bring them back. It's far too dangerous. You need to get out of there. You know, we don't know anything about this, and we cannot bring them back to the ship. It would be way too dangerous.
Right.
So the doctor comes back, he's beamed back aboard, immediately goes over to the transporter person, officer, and he does a scan, and they find some of the virus.
And the biofilter.
The biofilter, mm-hmm. And they seal it off. And
they purge the filters, right?
Purge the filters, yep. And they think they're good.
But they're not.
Yeah. That virus hid in the transporter buffer.
That's right. It migrated to the buffer. So they didn't catch that.
Yep.
Sad, sad day. We're in the sick bay, and the doctor is creating the synthetic antigen that will inhibit the virus's ability to replicate. But he's really not sure how to restore the infected cells to their original version, but at least he has something to stop the replication of the virus. And then the doctor apologizes for his overzealous behavior. And now we see another example of the doctor surpassing his program. He's becoming more human-like. You know, he actually is concerned about how he acted, that he apologizes to Chakotay. This is very undoctor-like in a way, if you think about that. And then even Kes says, after Chakotay leaves, Kes says, I told you he'd understand. So clearly the doctor had already had expressed his concerns to Kes, his assistant, about how he acted on his away mission. But then he kind of gets the voice of approval from Chakotay. Chakotay says, you know what? You're going to face other moral dilemmas in the future. And as far as your mission performance, I would say it was exemplary.
Yeah.
So he gets this A+ report card for his first real away mission.
Bringing back the virus.
But we don't know he did that yet.
Yeah.
Right? So we're
going to find that out soon.
Yes, because we're in mess hall now. Where there we go.
Yeah.
The beginning of the Paris-Torres relationship right here. That's the beginning, well, the seed
the
of the relationship.
Beginnings. That's right. We see that Paris has been the temporary cook.
Mm-hmm.
Neelix is on this mission with the captain, which I just find interesting that Paris, like, he was the temporary nurse. He's the temporary cook. It's just like the writers did not care. Like, imagine if Chakotay had just been thrown around. Like, okay, yeah, let's just make Chakotay the nurse. Let's make him the cook. He's the cook.
I understand.
They had no idea what to do with Paris.
I hear
you. Throw him into these things.
All right. I hear your complaints, Robbie. I understand. Paris was the temporary fill in the blank, but you were not Harry's temporary friend. You were Harry's permanent friend.
Thanks, buddy.
See? All right,
so Paris has burned the food, and he's like, something's going on with the power surges, and he tells B'Elanna, you know, to look into the power surges and the problem, and then they have a little back and forth about, oh, you're blaming me, it's my fault, oh no, it's not, you know. There was a nice
flirty, witty banter, sharp banter.
Paris can be sharp.
Yeah.
Paris can be a kind of a jerk sometimes. And so you get a little sense of, like, but it's fun. You can see that they're both having a little fun, and she can be kind of a jerk sometimes, and she, you know, that comes out.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, she goes in, she goes to open up the panel, and I notice, you know, people, we've talked about like the close standing of characters on the show, like when they block us, they stage the shot so that
that's right.
Janeway and Chakotay have to be inches apart, unnaturally. Yeah. Or I saw this a bunch with Paris and B'Elanna in this in these scenes.
Yeah,
Paris is right up in her business in the in the when the panel's open,
and she doesn't seem to mind it either.
She doesn't seem to mind it. Anyway, she goes to fix it. She gets slimed by the gel pack virus.
Yes.
You know, the virus is somewhere in the gel pack or something, and she gets slimed by it. And we
did you notice how she pronounced what we know now to be? Janeway pronounces it. She Janeway says it's some sort of mucilaginous compound. Torres says it's some kind of mucilaginous compound.
She does a
soft day here. So it's the tomato tomato moment.
Mucilaginous.
Right, mucilaginous.
Interesting.
Mucilaginous. There's two different
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. But did you also, how did you feel, Tom Paris? How did you feel being the whole reason why we have a patient zero?
I was going to say, if it wasn't for Tom whining about the burnt food, which he shouldn't have been cooking to begin with.
No.
Then we never would have had this outbreak. Yeah. I say he's like, he's not really patient zero. He's like, you know.
Well, B'Elanna's patient zero, right?
She's patient zero,
he's the first one. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. How does Tom Paris feel about causing patient zero to be zero?
It's tragic.
You basically gave your future wife a virus.
The virus.
Yeah. The infected. You infected your future wife.
Yeah. All right, we see her get slimed, and then we go back to sick bay. Doc's still working to find a cure.
Yeah,
I didn't make any more notes because I wanted to go right back to Paris and B'Elanna.
But... Well, okay, I made notes here, and I said Janeway's experienced a high fever right now. Okay, and then he has the antigen ready to go, and she says that she is basically going to be the guinea pig for this antigen, which, you know, there's parallels to now too, if you think about that as well. The doctor tells Janeway that the larger macroviruses are driven by some sort of instinct to assemble their host population. So that's why we're all kind of jammed together in the mess hall. So maybe you were, this would have all happened in the mess hall. Yeah. You wouldn't have left there to go to the bridge and come back, right?
No,
so you would have been there the whole time. The mess hall bridge flashback, the doctor realizes that the macrovirus is on the ship and airborne. That's where Chakotay orders a level 4 quarantine protocol for deck 2, which is what he should have ordered for the entire transporter room for when the doctor came back.
These
right?
kind of quarantines, like Chakotay calls for a quarantine. I mean, again, interesting with COVID and what we've been going through.
Yeah.
The effectiveness of like, when do we lock things down you know what happened on the ship. A lot of it was just no one's fault. They just didn't realize what was going on and how quickly it was spreading. So
and he orders the quarantine immediately the minute he finds out that had happened. So that's the right move, right? He did what he could. So the sickbay flashback scene is where Kes is studying the virus, and she's now freaked out because it is growing exponentially larger by the second, and that to the point that the doctor has to erect a containment field around station.
She's looking at the slide, you know, on the microscope or something. She sees this thing growing. Yeah. She turns away to talk to the doctor, and when she goes back to the microscope, she's like, Where did it go?
It's
not there. And all of a sudden, it like comes out of the machine. She steps back and quick, lock it down. They put a force field around it.
Exactly. And now we're in the mess hall flashback scene where Paris sees
the traumatic scene for Tom Paris.
Yes.
I mean, this could have been the end of it right there. When you see somebody with a neck orifice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And bugs are crawling out of it.
Yes.
It's tough to romance them later.
You look disgusted. You really did. You were like, oh no. It was sort of like the first date and she was chewing her food in a weird way and it bugged you. That's the look you had on your face.
But I was still like 2 inches away from her nose.
Yeah.
I was so close. What was going on with all the close?
Were you thinking of kissing her?
I don't know. I think it was just the director said, get a little closer. Get in the shot.
All right, Robbie, I need you to get a little closer to Roxanne.
Yeah,
right next to her nose. Yes. Yeah.
So, okay.
It was a little close and the bug thing was a little gross.
It was gross, but it was well acted by you. I believed you 1,000%. And I also believe that you were really annoyed and that maybe you would not romance her in the future because of this.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. We're back in sick bay. The doctor is testing the antigen on the macrovirus. And now we have a very comical scene of Bob Picardo wrestling a macrovirus. Yes.
A giant,
yeah, like a medicine ball is what he's wrestling.
Yeah. Basically. Now, this is the beginning of, you know, this happens later on with Janeway, by the way, this mm-hmm. sort of hand to hand wrestling.
Yeah.
A macrovirus. I have to say, you know, this was 1996 or 97, maybe. I can't remember. 96, I think.
Yeah.
I have to say the CGI was not that great back then compared to what we're used to now. And so the detail of a CGI, you know, virus monster having to wrestle with Bob Picardo in a scene, it's just that I felt like the CG, it was a tricky thing to do. It was a very bold thing to try back then, but I don't know that we succeeded by today's standards. It's just his hand didn't seem to really be holding anything. It just felt
exactly
off.
Yeah.
It felt more comical than, you know.
That's why I said it looked more comical, because it didn't really look realistic. I felt like I was watching the original Clash of the Titans, you know, and they were doing stop motion photography or something like that. It was like, what is he doing? It just looked awkward, right?
It looked awkward.
Which then goes to the next scene in the mess hall flashback. The doctor is going there to administer this antigen slash vaccine to Paris. But before he can do it, he's attacked by the virus. And yet another crazy, you know, just comical scene.
I'm always hiding under the table, and it's, you know, just, he's crawling under the table, and he fails because there's too many of them now. There's
right,
a bunch of
right.
the big virus monsters.
Right, and the concern is that, you know, they're using these when they get really big. The macrovirus uses this sort of like a needle or lance kind of thing, right? And it's if that thing hits the center of his mobile emitter. Autonomous emitter, we could lose his program, right? So that's the danger of it. Because you know, when you're watching this, you're thinking, well, the doctor is immune. Well, he can just walk amongst them. But if they're all attacking him.
Yeah, Chakotay said that earlier in the episode. Mm-hmm. You've got to protect.
You got to be careful, right?
You got to be careful with this portable emitter.
Exactly. Yep. So now we go back to sick bay in the current time
period. Present
time. Yeah, present time.
Janeway.
Mm-hmm. Doctor tells Janeway that the larger macroviruses have broken through to the other decks and overwhelmed the ship, and he can't administer the vaccine because of the attacks that he has to endure. Janeway gears up again, and she asks, hey, can this antigen be distributed in a gaseous form? And the doctor's like, well, yeah. So two canisters of antigen are prepared, one for Janeway and one for the doctor. And the mission, the doctor and Janeway will go in separate paths to try to get to where they have to get to release the antigen in the gaseous form so that it can go amongst the environmental controls all throughout the ship, right? Mm-hmm. To heal everybody. Mm-hmm. And then she says, before she leaves sick bay, she turns to the sounds of the viruses that are knocking on the outside of the sick bay doors. And she says, we'll be right with you, which is such a John McClane kind of diehard hero one-liner. It's like, what Janeway? That's a there's coffee in that nebula kind of one-liner, which,
very like big action hero.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Very heroic. I just found that really amusing to hear her say something like that. They're in the Jeffries tubes. And Janeway and the doctor split up.
Lots of crawling in the Jeffries.
Lots of crawling,
It's a bad photographic background.
Yes. Now, what the heck room is that Janeway's in? The room where she's trying to get the environmental controls back online? It looks like the mess hall at one point. It kind of pans over and it looks like where the clamshell bed is a little bit. But there's some other piece of equipment there. What do you think that was, Robbie?
I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. I that's interesting because I didn't clock, you know, I didn't really honestly, like, it didn't register for me, like, where they shot that. I kind of blew by.
I just, again, with my meticulous viewing habits, I looked at that and I thought, what the heck? This is like a storage area or something. Like, where is this on the ship? I've never seen this.
I wonder where
before.
It was.
No.
There was that little area by the Jeffries tubes and that ladder. It was off engineering and there was
But that's an alcove though, Robbie. That was like a little alcove, right? It wasn't a room. I mean, this place looked like it's the same size as sick bay. And I think it was sick bay redressed. I think it was the sick bay set, but they redressed it. They moved out the clamshell
part
bed.
Of it.
They put something else in there. Yeah. And then, so just like, you know, as we've been talking about Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, their hero journey is always fraught with different hurdles. And the next hurdle that we find, the Tac-Tac are now firing on Voyager.
Those dang Tac-Tac, they come on the screen and they're doing their moves and their,
my God,
all their gestures, which are just silly. I just got to say, like,
totally.
Tac-Tac are the silliest. And by the way, like, we talked about tactical advisors for some of our, you know, tactical scenes. I wonder if there were any like gesture advisors or if the actors just like made all this crap up. I think they just made it up.
That would be my guess. I thought the same thing watching this. My first thought, I went straight to, and that's another thing why it takes so long. Cause like the minute I saw the first opening scene, I went to social media to find Albie Selznick to try to send him a message to ask him, did you come up with all of those moves on your own? Was there someone there to go through some type of movement choreograph, a choreographed moves with you? Did somebody, was there a consultant, any of that? But he's not on Twitter. And he's, you know, my that would be the fastest way to get a hold of him.
Yeah. My guess is no. My guess is knowing what we had available in terms of advisors, or we never had much of anything available that I can recall.
Yeah.
I doubt it. It would have been nice if they had had maybe a sign language person there, somebody who, you know, not to do signing, but to kind of go, all right, what might work? What, I don't know. They should have invented some version of some moves.
Yeah, because if you had a signing person, you could root it. You could anchor that performance of those gestures in some sense of reality, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can find, okay, we all know there is American Sign Language and for certain moves mean certain things, and maybe they could have used that. Yeah, that would have been smart.
Something like that would have been, would help it feel more authentic. It just felt like the actors were kind of doing silly moves.
Yeah.
It felt a bit silly and arbitrary sitcom-ish. And random.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
They said that they have to purify, is the word they use. They purified the mining place, and now they're going to purify this because this virus is so dangerous.
Yeah. Janeway pleads for one chance to save her crew. And Tac-Tac captain says 1 hour. Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, the Tac-Tac torpedo destroyed the secondary power couplings and knocked environmental control offline once again. But now
we need the environmental control to be offline so that Janeway starts sweating again.
That's what
so
it
that
is.
When she climactically wrestles the giant virus monster, that she can be kind of, you know, oiled up and looking very heroic.
That was important.
Fire the torpedo.
Right. So what we've learned is that that's the plasma. Isn't that the warp core not being able to vent the plasma properly? That's why the heat is.
That's the science version of
what happened.
Yeah.
But then now comes one of the funniest things in the whole episode, where she realizes there's got to be a distraction. I can use holodeck characters.
Yes.
So she uses our Talaxian resort program.
Yeah.
And it's somewhat morbid that she does this, but the fact that they're holodeck characters, it makes it really funny, I think.
Yes.
Right. We see Marty, my friend Marty, who the background actor. Yeah, he's out there too.
All the resort people are walking around, and then all of a sudden these virus monsters start swarming into the holodeck onto the resort program, and they're all, you know, running around like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back to Janeway, and then when we cut back to them, it's just a shot of them all lying on the ground.
Just like, well, because Janeway programmed them to react to being attacked by the virus, right?
Yes.
So, because otherwise
it would not have really hurt them because they're holodeck characters.
That's right.
So she had to program them to react to that attack as if they were real humans. Yeah.
It's ingenious and funny at the same time.
And silly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now we're in the corridors. Yeah.
We're in the corridors. She's got her antigen bomb. Yep. She's trying to explode this thing. And she ends up being attacked by one of these virus monsters.
Knocks her phaser rifle out of her hand. Isn't that what happened? Right. She has to use her Bowie knife, basically. So.
Yeah. She wrestles this thing in a series sequence of, you know, hand to hand moves. She uses the Bowie knife. She cuts off the thing. Almost gets her. She grabs the little tentacle and cuts it off. And,
and very heroic.
Stabs it. Yeah. Blows up her, you know, ignites her antigen bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this goes back to the CGI of, you know, the mid 90s, when the explosion and the fire and things happen. was okay. It was almost better in the shot where they just had an interactive light around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I almost wish we hadn't seen the fire and the smoke and the, because it was CG from that period, which just was a little,
It was okay. Yeah. It pulls you out of the story a little bit. A little bit. You're like, it could be more realistic, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely. Now we're back in that weird room, which we have no idea where they're at, where Janeway was working on the environmental controls. And that's where she communicates with the TAC-TAC captain, right? She's in that strange room again. And he's telling her, she says, listen, we've got the antigen. We'll give it to you. Just make sure you don't shoot at us anymore. And he's like, okay. And that's basically the end of the relations with the TAC-TAC race. I don't think we don't see them again after this.
No, thank God. We don't. Those gestures are silly. So yeah, that was the end of it. They do not purify. They stop trying to purify and destroy Voyager.
Yeah.
And and then we jump ahead a little bit and everybody's feeling a little better.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of see that people are, you know, ship repairs are happening. And
yeah,
one thing I noticed in this section was there was this sort of lounge music.
Oh yeah. That ended the whole episode. Right. Chakotay comes to the ready room and he says, you know, hey, Janeway says, I'm going to grant extended R&R, rest and relaxation for the entire crew. And Chakotay invites her to go skiing, which then made me think about you because you're in Utah where there's wonderful snow. And I thought, wow, you can just go skiing on a holodeck. It's so much fun.
But Chakotay, they're all recovering and trying to relax a little, repair the ship. And he invites her to go skiing. And she's like, I love to ski, but I'm a little tired. I'm going to,
I've had my workout, right?
I've had my workout, she says. Yeah. And we see her painting.
Yes. And cue the jazz music. Bung, there's jazz music.
Like that.
Yeah.
And she's painting. And I was just like, a couple of things. First of all, when have we ever seen her paint?
Never.
When does she ever paint again? I don't think
ever again. Oh, I'm sorry. She did paint once.
What?
In your episode that you directed.
Oh, well, that was finger paint with the spiritual.
It's still painting. You asked when she painted. So Janeway,
maybe that's why she's painting here, because it was sort of a spiritual healing thing. And she's
foreshadowing.
Maybe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. But she's painting. And then this music, I've never heard one of our episodes end on such goofy music.
Yeah, not at all. Well, I didn't think it was goofy. It was very jazzy to me. Did you not feel that?
I thought it was like lounge music. It was like,
No. Like, it was jazz music. And I thought, what an interesting choice to make to be.
Yeah, it was very different.
And you end on, you see Voyager kind of cruising
with that music,
impulse speed with that music. Yeah. Yeah. It didn't bother me. I like that. I like things not being. Yes. I because you're not expecting it. You did not expect
totally
that at all.
I am not
right?
expecting that.
If you can use, if you throw something in an episode that I don't expect, then I admire that. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it. Yeah. It pulled you out though. It made you. Yeah. You were offended, or shall I say, you were tack-tacked by that. Basically,
I was tack-tacked. Yes.
I knew you were tack-tacked by it.
Well, there you go. That was Macrocosm. On a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it a 5.
Okay.
Right in the middle.
All right.
5.5. Okay. 5.5.
I'm going to go one more than you. I'm going to go 6.5 just because of the way the storytelling was and how the mystery, how it unfolded. So yeah. I like all the different levels that are going on. There's a lot of stuff going on. Good character development for the Doctor as well as Janeway. So I'm going to say 6.5.
Okay. Yeah, I think that for me, the things that were misfires were, you know, big hits on the score of this episode. Things like the tack-tack. I just found them to be ridiculous and silly.
Okay.
Some of the CG stuff and the wrestling. And I thought the storytelling, the thing you brought up in the very beginning, it was almost like three different episodes in a way. It was like, oh, there's the first episode before she gets filled in by the Doctor. And then we kind of go back, you know, in a whole other episode. We're like following another story. And it just felt structurally a little confusing to me and hard to find a groove. And then the CG stuff, yeah, all that stuff. 5.5.
Okay.
The theme that I came away with was the future does not know how to virus any better than us. That's my theme.
Very good. Very good.
I mean,
I love that.
You know, we've been a mess for the last year here on planet Earth with our coronavirus. We're not figuring it out very well. Clearly, the future does not know how to deal with viruses any better than we do right now. So
I'm gonna not say anything.
We need a little Janeway to come and COVID our.
We need Janeway to take care of the COVID.
Yeah, we do.
That's what you're saying, yeah, right?
Exactly.
I hear you. All righty. So that comes to the end of our recap. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. And tune in next week when Robbie and I will be reviewing the episode Fair Trade. Everyone who happens to be a Patreon patron, thank you for your patronage. Please stay tuned for your bonus material.